Joining us on Static this evening, it is fantastic to have Elias from Ice Age. How are you?
I'm not bad at all.
Good to hear. Ice Age are back in business, despite every odd and obstacle. It must be a joy and vindication to have an Ice Age album out.
Yeah, it's nice, you know. Like, we've been sitting on this shit for a while. So it is this thing where it's wonderful to have this little child bird leave its nest, get its wings, and lose control over it, in a sense. You know, like, it'll just go out there. I have no idea what happens to it, who listens to it, but it will go out and have its own life. I'm appreciative of that.
And what a beautiful thing to have set free, Elias, because this album for Ice Age is an opening up of your world somewhat. You guys are now a five-piece. You've got your guitarist Casper in the band, and it's also the first time you've worked with an outside producer. So it is a broader experience, this Ice Age album.
Well, I mean, in the same way that life is just like a broadening. When you can't move back, you got to move forward. And if it's a vessel that has to move forward, what motion do? You push. So things will tend to get bigger, I guess.
Did you have much trepidation with bringing in an outside producer? I mean, you picked the right guy. You got Pete Kemba, Sonic Boom, to work with you. He feels like an inspired choice, not only as a producer, I guess, but also a kindred spirit, Elias. Probably a great sounding board and gearhead for you guys to have in your orbit.
A kindred spirit and a gearhead he was indeed, yeah. We never did it before because wrenching the cloth to squeeze out these songs, it's not easy. And we never wanted to bring out any outside influence or star producer before because that could potentially damage the process. So it was kind of daunting to do it. I was nervous about it. So when we heard that he had reached out in an interview saying he wanted to work with us, being a Spaceman 3 fan and all that, I was like, well, what if he's a fucking bastard? I don't know that. You know, this could be horribly wrong, and I could be bringing in some demented fuck that would damage this one shot we have at doing justice to these songs. Luckily, it was quite the contrary. He was wonderful. He was just another essential crew member among the ship, and we were all steering the same way, so that was good.
I also know that he likes to create an interesting environment to make records in, and you guys went to some dilapidated, wood-paneled Lisbon radio studio, like a vintage sort of setting. So was the mood and the place good working with Pete as well?
Yeah, it was good. Always when picking the studio, we prioritized atmosphere to functionality. And I heard from friends in Lisbon that this studio was a bit fucked, but I didn't really know the extent of it. So yeah, it was literally raining inside the studio. The rain was leaping through the cracks. But that's a good metaphor, you know, like water is a recurring theme of this record. It feels a bit like a prophecy that we would then be literally rained upon in the studio while also having a song called Drink Rain. Like, it's just like, you know, these things tend to come together and it almost feels predestined, even though it's just freak chance.
And Pete also is probably a great force in the studio as well. We spoke to him on the show here last year when the Sonic Boom album came out.
Oh, you talked to him? Okay.
And he's much more interested in working in some unconventional ways, be it outdoors or in non-traditional environments. He said that he spent some of the best summers of his youth in tiny indoor studios, and he's learned that he doesn't want to do that ever again.
Well, he did recommend, when we were picking between studios in Portugal, the more functional one. And we were like, no, we gotta go with the dicey option. I feel like it's not supposed to be easy. You leave room for the unplanned, and in the unplanned, that's where magic happens, so to speak.
And Elias, despite any obstacles that might have got in your way then making this record, and for a band that began with a couple of albums that were fairly nihilistic hardcore and bleak post-punk, there is, for want of a better word, Elias, these days, a classicism about what Ice Age do now, and it feels like you have more of a confidence in your abilities now and you can take on different styles and genres?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like in the beginning, most of what we were doing was out of spite. We hated everything around us and we had no capability or technical knowledge about nothing. we hated the mainstream world, we hated the indie world, we hated the underground world. We thought everything was garbage around us. Nothing was speaking to whatever, like, that feeling that you got in your chest is. So then you're kind of left with having to create it for yourself. And you start out by just lashing out. You tumble and whirl with the things that life throws against you. And you gain nuance. And you also gain capability. In the beginning, we were playing fast and frenetic and noisy, because if we slowed the pace down, everything would fall apart. So you can call that confidence, even though we always had that, I guess. But whatever it is, I hate sounding like some person that's gained some kind of conclusion, because I'm just as confused as I was when I was 18, I think. It's just a different set of things to be confused about.
But I also love the fact that every time an Ice Age album comes along, it sounds like you're not afraid to try things out. And on this album, Vendetta has this almost Manchester kind of swagger about it. And Gold City has this E Street Band style breakdown throughout. So it feels like you guys are always willing to try things or push a boat out and see if you can make it work.
Yeah, but that's kind of part of the recipe of why we survived, is because we've always been more than willing to disappoint. After the first two records, we took like an almost perverse enjoyment in disappointing our fans. When you gain this sort of hype or whatever you say, there is a vast multitude of people just trying to box you in or try and be like, okay, this is what you do. So rather do a continuation of what they say that you do, well, fuck them all, you know. Let us dissatisfy, move along, and eventually people will hopefully catch up.
I also love that High and Hurt even includes a lengthy interpolation into a Christian hymn, because you've done a bit of Will the Circle Be Unbroken. Was something like that a happy accident or deliberate, Elias?
Kind of a combination of those two. I remember being in the process of writing that song, and suddenly I realized that I am actively ripping off this classic gospel hymn. So the song by nature is quite scumbaggish, so it felt tempting, blasphemous almost, to actually reference the original song, because it alters the whole meaning of the lyrics. I mean, it was just too tempting not to do it. It felt like the wrong thing to do, so you should go for it.
I was wondering if that came from Sonic Boom steering you into that song, because Spaceman 3 did a cover of that in a slightly different or retitled version of one of the B-sides on one of their singles.
No, I didn't even know, and Pete didn't even mention it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So he just let you do it and didn't say, oh, by the way, I've already recorded this song once before.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe he was like, oh, well, those boys are the Spaceman 3 fans, they probably fucking know, but probably didn't.
I'll let them have their fun.
Yeah.
And Elias, are the reasons for making music different for you now than when the band began? Back then, you said you were sort of lashing out at things, but was it probably hanging out with your mates and getting to play shows is the biggest of thrills? I mean, does it feel like there's a higher purpose now?
Well, yes and no. In the beginning, for sure, there was that lashing out aggressively, and that meant that you weren't too aware of why you were doing anything. And I think in the beginning, it was also a means to create community in Copenhagen. As a teenager, being like, okay, this is how we dress, this is how we do, this is how we're impossible, this is why you should be scared to be around this. I still think that even though the trajectory has changed a bit, I don't think there's anybody else out there doing what we're doing. I still think we have our feet planted in something that's not getting filled by anybody else. So that's a necessity there. When I started, I had nothing going on in my life. I was a high school dropout with no aspirations, not to music, not to anything, just a fuck up. And luckily, having had no meaning, nothing to lead me towards anything, I stumbled upon something that has 10 years on provided me with a sense of purpose. And this is what I like to do with my life. I would crumble without having this songwriting to base my existence around. So yeah, no, it's provided me with a sense of purpose. And that's a lot.
And it feels reflected in this album too. A lot of the songs on Seek Shelter seem to be searching for some kind of salvation or reveling in it. I guess Shelter Song perhaps spells that out the clearest. Come lay right here beside me. So is there part of your soul being scratched by making this kind of music nowadays?
Well, I mean, you live and you continue down the road. And I think you open up to certain vulnerabilities. And I've come to the conclusion that it's not... Sometimes you got to be aggressive and you got to make a lot of noise. You got to make a lot of fuss. But that's not equal to braveness. The brave thing or the risky thing about songwriting is actually trying to reflect full three-dimensional human existence. And as I go, I find that I'm more capable of introducing strength in vulnerability.
It's music as communion as well. The gospel choir and a couple of these songs. There must be no greater thrill than hearing your lyrics sung by a heavenly gospel choir, and it must feel like a really...
Oh, fuck yeah. Like, I was terrified when they were about to head into the studio because I'm not technical. And it was kind of funny, actually. Like, when they came in, I really thought I did, like, an angelic job of singing on this record. Like, we were like, okay, I've learned to sing a little bit now. It seems pitch perfect. And then reality kicked in when those people came into the studio that can actually sing. Then the sheer contrast of our voices positioned together was like, my voice is still completely rugged and fucked compared to somebody that actually sings this lovely.
And like you say, you know, there's still always room to grow in your music. So one day...
Well, I get better, but I don't get more correct.
And Elias, I like the fact that despite the beauty, there is still some bleak and brutal imagery on this record. Love Kills Slowly is one of those songs which says, love kills us time and time again, circumcisions to our skin, which is a harsh allegory. And I love that there'll probably always be that element in your writing too.
Yeah, I mean, like I find it funny that you pick up on that line. I'm happy that you did, because I feel like that song is very much archetypical. It's stating a simple truth. Then I actually find great interest in, and I find it the very hardest to take these kind of very arbitrary, obvious truths and making them feel like they're dignified or your own somehow. But then bringing in an analogy like a circumcision in this simple description of the fading nature of love, that's just my humor. I put it in there and then I'm like, oh, I wonder if anybody's going to notice.
Here's hoping that one day when Ice Age gets a tour again, you can have rooms of people singing those words back at you.
Oh, I fucking love that, yeah.
We might have a listen to Dear Saint Cecilia off the album right now, and I don't know when we'll ever see you down here again, but I live in hope, Elias.
Eventually.
It was great to have tracked you down, and it's so good to have this Ice Age album with us. This is Dear Saint Cecilia on Static. Thanks.
Yeah, nice talking to you.